world. It's your boy Pete Walsh, aka Lamborghini PD, aka Polo PD, episode 27, Respect the Game podcast, aka the Jordan Crawford episode. I'm here with my boy Abe Schwadron,
aka Abraham Lincoln Bio, back.
Fresh off the jet. My son was just out in Chicago.
Yeah, man. You know, I had to catch a Whiz Bulls game on the road.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your trip, man? What'd you get into? As you said, you went and saw Whiz Bulls. How was that?
Not only did I see that, you know, a Wizards team with no John Wall, no Bradley Beal, that actually kept up with the Bulls for almost three quarters. But right after the game, also stopped by, you know, Jordan Brand was celebrating some new jerseys that collab with Don C on the south side of Chicago for a couple of schools. Those jerseys are absolute fire, by the way. I don't even know if, like, high school kids realize when they get these collabs from Jordan and Doncy, they're literally running around playing basketball in, like, jerseys that are worth like $2,000.
Did you cop?
No, I didn't cop. I don't play for one of the six high schools that got blessed with the jerseys.
You don't,
man,
even pay rent, dog. You got some disposable income.
Chill.
Dude, that's good. You made a brief comment earlier that the Bulls are trash and seem to just play up they're on national television, which is completely understandable considering the makeup of their roster.
I think there's just like a national perception that the Bulls are a little better than expected, maybe because of the way they came out on opening night, or, you know, the way they played against Miami the other night on national TV. But I think, you know, when they're not in the spotlight, when you're just at a, you know, the other 70 games that they're going to play this season,
like when they're playing the Wizards,
they're kind of dysfunctional. Yeah, and for a team like the Wizards, who occasionally had lineups out there that was like Markieff Morris, Thomas Satoransky, Jason Smith, Marcus Thornton, and throw in whoever you want as your fifth, for the Bulls to not be smacking that team, I mean, they eventually pulled away and, you know, held a double digit lead, but I just, you know, the Bulls are going to struggle to go on any kind of streak that puts them in position to be one of the top teams in the East, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, Rondo has, like, historically played well in national television games. So, I don't know. There's probably a bunch of smoke and mirrors that started the season with them. Like, they were, like, hitting threes and shit. I'm not buying it. Anyway, much more interesting things to talk about than the Wizards and the Bulls.
How dare you?
I don't know. We got a couple of things written down. Why you tell me where you want to start, man.
I mean, shouldn't we just start with the weird Phil Jackson stuff that's happening today?
Yeah, I mean,
not that we necessarily want to dive too deep, but just Phil Jackson. Are we just over Phil Jackson as a person?
I mean, I've been over Phil Jackson basically since he got to New York. I never bought into the hype of trusting Phil. I mean, what is it trust in of a guy who's a complete front office novice? Mm. And I don't know. I mean, I think, like, yeah, he was a great coach in his day, but he never mentions the fact that he had Michael Jordan, that he had Shaq, that he had Scottie Pippen. It's all about Kobe, excuse me. My God, how can I leave him out? And he, like, I don't know. He just tries to front like it was all the triangle. It was all his doing. And
which he now claims to not care about.
Yeah. So he's just all ass backwards. I mean, he's old, dude. He's, like, still – I mean, that's got to account for something. So, I mean, I just feel bad for Carmelo that he's getting caught up in this whole thing. For those that don't know, he did a Q&A with ESPN, and the big thing that happened was
– Phil did.
Phil did, yes. Yeah. I'm sorry, not Carmelo. The big thing that came from that was Maverick Carter, who is business partners with LeBron, a good friend of LeBron. They grew up together, or at least played in high school together. And Mav took his Phil Jackson's posse comment as having some racial undertones. So it's kind of blowing up and been a big thing, and it's just making Phil and the Knicks look really, really bad.
I mean, from an outsider perspective, someone who's not invested in the Knicks at all, and I'm not a Knicks fan, but sort of being here in New York, I feel like the Phil Jackson experience is just only produce like a series of quotes and headlines. It's like all that's come of Phil Jackson being here.
No wins.
Right.
Quotes, headlines, dysfunction, and zero wins.
Awkward tweets.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, like, he's like throwing shade at Pat Riley, who's been way more successful in this decade than he has been. Like, he's throwing shots at Tom Thibodeau, who he didn't want to sign as the head coach, and then he claims that, you know, he ran Luol Deng into the ground, and then goes and signs Joakim Noah to 4 years, $72 million.
Meanwhile, the fact that Sasha Vujacic is still on an NBA roster in 2016, who's like weird nudes does he have on his phone that he's like blackmailing himself back into the league?
It kind of feels like Phil is like just getting guys to stick up for him almost through the players. Like that, I can't see any other reason to have a guy like Sasha on the team. So I don't know. I feel like this thing is really bad. It's a really bad look for Phil, and I'm starting to think his days might be numbered in New York, man.
Yeah, I mean, but aren't a lot of Knicks fans? Wouldn't a lot of Knicks fans be fine with that?
Yeah, I think absolutely.
At this point,
absolutely. I think they gotta. I mean, you look across in Brooklyn, and like, all right, that team was supposed to be the shitty team in New York this year, and supposed to, you know, knock and 10, and you know they're sitting at 4-6, I believe, right?
It wasn't there over under like 20 wins.
Yeah,
and they're, I mean, they're well on their way.
And you know, teams always talk about culture and getting the right guys, and the Nets have totally done that. They've gotten guys that play hard. They got a coach who knows what he's doing. They got a GM from the Spurs tree, so you know that automatically you have a great track record.
Not
there.
To mention they've been playing without Jeremy Lin.
Yeah,
they're arguably their best player.
I mean, save for the beatdown they got by the Clippers, they've been pretty much competitive in every game, you know.
And getting beat down by the Clippers is something almost every team in the league,
yeah,
is so, getting at this point.
I mean, the Nets are supposed to be like the bastard child in New York,
right,
for
exactly.
The next few years, and like, I don't know, like, yeah, they're still far away, but compared to the Knicks, at least they're not having any dysfunction, and that's always a big thing. Like, if they can stay low and just build, and then, you know, before
let's
you know
build.
It, yeah,
let's build.
So I don't know. I'm weirdly like excited about the Nets, which I've never been in my entire life. So I don't know. It feels good to root for them and a team that kind of knows what they're doing.
Wait, one last thing on the Knicks.
Yeah.
Did you think it was strange? We haven't spoken since this happened, but did you think it was strange when Derrick Rose got booed in Chicago?
I didn't even know that happened. Oh, wait, I did know that happened.
Yeah,
I take that
man.
Back.
It's just been that long since we sat down and had a conversation about hoop.
Do I think it was weird? I mean, weird how? Like, that he got... I mean, no, I don't think it was weird that he got booed at all. I think he left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Yeah, I think you're right. And and being in Chicago a little bit and sort of asking a couple people, just even regular people, regular fans and stuff, I mean... I don't know. I wasn't necessarily like surprised, but I was just surprised at it being kind of a consensus that people are at this point in Chicago are kind of upset with Derrick Rose. So.
Oh, really? I thought it was like a minority that was upset with everything.
I think
that
it's
happened.
More. I think it's more of a frustration than maybe being upset. Just like, you know, all that he was going to be and it just didn't happen for whether you blame him personally for his injuries and everything thereafter, or just the way, you know, the way he was talking a little crazy in the media, mm-hmm. Probably not in his own mind, but the way that it was perceived. So just thought it was interesting the way that completely just went to shit over the last couple of years.
What was
to the point that they'll boo him in his own city.
Was it weird that he got booed and Noah got cheers across the board?
Yeah. But I think that speaks to, there's just, it's all about personality in the NBA.
Yeah.
I think other sports may be different because you get assessed a lot more maybe on literally just what you do on the court or the field. In the NBA, there's your personality is so much at the forefront.
Yeah.
Your social media presence, what you say in the media, like you're literally your face because you're not wearing a helmet or a mask or whatever. So it just goes to show you that in the league, like, you know, everything you do – talking about the game and off the court means just as much to fans as what you do on the court.
If not more.
Yeah.
If not more.
I mean, look, we've learned that lesson about, you know, going through our top 50 or even going through posts on our Instagram, which seems so trivial. But, like, think about someone like Dwayne Wade, who has an unbelievably sky-high number, legions of fans, and really hasn't been the same Dwayne Wade, the player, in several years.
Mm.
So.
Yeah, I mean, perception is everything in the NBA.
Yep.
So, and it, I mean, like, the thing is, you know, you build your, quote, personal brand.
Let's build.
Yeah, let's build. I mean, might have to name this episode, Let's Build. But, like, that stuff leads to, you know, players getting bigger checks too. It's not always about play. I mean, as much as coaches want to be about, you know, how a guy fits their system, you know, GMs and owners, they want to bring people to watch them and make money.
I hate using the phrase
make money off of them, but it's like that's as dirty as that feels saying. It's the reality anyway. What else? You want to talk about some fun shit, or you want to keep going on this? Time we're about to do a potty, it's like, I don't think people want to hear us talk about like basketball, man. Let's talk about all the other stuff going on.
I mean, there's.
I'm trying to find this happy medium.
There's an endless amount of other stuff going on, but I mean, we were just kind of looking through the league leaders and talking about DeMar DeRozan earlier in the office and stuff. We got five guys in the league averaging 30 plus points per game, which is pretty amazing. And, you know, not in that category right now, averaging less than 30 points a game, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, like the amount of dope performances that are happening every single night across the NBA is ridiculous. We really are in like a new golden age of the NBA.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. You can turn on a game any night and catch somebody putting up huge numbers.
If League Pass works, you can do that.
I mean, in the rare occasion that League Pass works, then yeah, you're going to catch a big game from somebody. I mean, even if you're going to watch a bad team like the Pelicans, you got Anthony Davis who's, you know, who could go off for 40 and 20 on any given night. So.
Yeah, and they played the Celtics last night, and Isaiah Thomas goes off.
Yeah, 37 and still loses. I mean, I just can't remember that stuff happening ever before. But
you got Wiggins going off for 47.
Easy. Like, it seems Lillard goes off every night. But the guy, you know, who not necessarily came out of nowhere, but is leading the league in scoring now is DeMar DeRozan. And, you know, I just got to give props to DeMar. Got that big deal in the summer. And then, you know, instead of resting on his laurels, came back and has just smashed the league. I mean, I think I read that his start is the only person who had a start similar to this was Michael Jordan back in the day. So
amazing, too, because, you know, in this era where everyone's shooting so many threes, he's averaging, he only takes like 1.5 threes
a
game.
Threes a game.
Fewer than Anthony Davis takes per game. Like, yeah. If you go down the list of sort of the top 20 scorers in the NBA, he's by far the lowest in terms of 3-point attempts.
It's crazy. It's really, it's
and
really
his percentage isn't even good either. He shoots 21% from three.
It's crazy. But his footwork is so polished, and like he's strong. I mean, we don't need to give like a full breakdown of DeMar DeRozan's game, but if you get a chance to watch, I mean, the Raptors, you know, they're going to finish high up in the East again, and he is the reason why. I mean, obviously Lowry is a big part of that too, but you know, DeMar, I mean, he's got to be up there for MVP right now. I mean, obviously only 10 games in, it's crazy to say that, but you know, it's probably between him, Harden, and Westbrook are probably the top three, right?
So of those, and just talking about how we were just saying, like, you can flip on any game, and talking about if you get a chance to see the Raptors, like, I want to know for you who is either your first or just a handful of guys that are like your favorite players to watch right now, you know, 10, 12 games into the NBA season.
I mean, DeMar is up there just because his game is so unlike anybody else's right now.
Yeah, but is that like sexy to watch though? Bunch of mid-range jumpers.
I don't know why.
I have complete respect for him doing it, but I'm not necessarily like hyped to turn
it
on.
Like, I like to watch. Like, he has to work like hard to get his buckets.
He does.
He does
kind of like multiple dribbles. Yeah. Turns his back to you.
Like a jab step, like a false step, and then a drop step to get a layup. So like, just to see that kind of
so annoying to guard.
Yeah,
man.
But it's almost like it's like a choreographed thing. Like, and I just appreciate how much time he puts into that. Outside of that, I really like watching Kemba Walker play. The way he's been playing has been awesome. Like, so dangerous off the pick and roll, and just, you know, low key the Hornets are 6-2, I think.
6-3.
You know, they were second in the East until they lost to the Cavs at the top of the week, but you know, another super fun team. So I've been really enjoying watching him play. And then, you know, I'm weird. Like, I watch
full stop. Okay, go.
I watch bad teams when they do good teams. So I like watching Devin Booker play. I like watching.
Poor Devin Booker was the subject of back-to-back swats though against the Dubs.
Yeah,
the other night.
True. I mean, I even like watching T.J. Warren play, who's also on that team. I mean, I've been watching a lot. I've been loving the way Jabari Parker's been playing this year. Just been so much more aggressive. Finally looks healthy coming off that knee injury.
And we got to give a shout-out also to Harrison Barnes.
Oh, good call. Go ahead, man.
Nah, I mean, just look. I mean, he's, you know, 22 points per game. We're only 9-10 games in, obviously, but for the way that he was slandered throughout the summer, we got to at least give him a shout-out and acknowledge that he's been playing well for that Mavs team so far this season.
Yeah, and we had multiple conversations in the summer.
Now, like, granted, they're 2-7.
Yeah, they suck, but...
but...
And I mean,
wasn't that kind of expected? And like, he's at least stepping up into the role that people weren't sure that he could.
Yeah, and I need to excuse myself. I'm not going to play myself out here. We got JJ Barea coming up. He was nice enough to stop by the office, and I was like, I was like, yeah, you guys are 1-7 right now, but you know, it could get better, and things could turn for the better, which I believe. I mean, they're still super banged up at the moment. He's their only point guard on the roster that's healthy right now, which was wild to me when he told me that.
What about Seth, man?
Oh, the Seth boys?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he plays more off the ball. I don't know. But nah, I mean, I hope they turn it around, because I like Harrison a lot. JJ, obviously, anyone who comes through here is automatically, we become a fan of.
For sure.
They got Godsham got on the staff, which JJ and I spoke about, and I mean, Frankie
maybe,
too.
Maybe he should just suit up if they need another point guard.
Well, I asked him, I'm like, yo, is he like crossing people over during practice? He's like, yeah, when he plays, he like really tries to put people on their ass. So I'm like, damn, that's amazing. I would love to watch
so
that.
Dope.
But yeah, I mean, you and I talked about Harrison Barnes a lot over the summer. Just like, so unfair that people were just slandering this poor dude. Like, yeah, literally one of the nicest guys in the NBA.
Get off his junk, man.
Yo, for real. Like, so we're happy for him. But what about you? Who are some other guys you like watching?
I mean, we've mentioned it before, but Harden still for me is probably the number one. Just like the way that he's averaging, I think, 12.5 assists per game and 30-plus points, too, which is ridiculous. Whether or not he keeps that up, it doesn't even really matter. But just, like, the way that he gets his assists is unlike any other traditional point guard gets their assists. Like, it's not like he's throwing incredible pocket passes or, you know, running textbook pick and roll. Like, he just, half the time, he just walks the ball up, and someone, you know, a help defender will take one step in his direction, and he'll immediately fire the ball over to Ryan Anderson for a three, or you know, he'll just walk the ball up, immediately blow past his man, and just throw the ball up in the air, and it's a dunk for Clint Capella. Like,
yeah.
Just the way that he gets his assists is so ridiculously easy because of all the attention that he's paid from the rest of the defense. So for me, that's just fun to watch.
I can't believe the Thunder let him go still like that, man.
Who are you, Bill Simmons?
The Bill Simmons boys? Nah, kid, never that. But shit, you got me flustered with the reference. I'm trying to come up with a good analogy, or a analogy like he would, but I cannot.
I mean, beyond that, obviously, like, for the last 3 years, my favorite player to watch is always Stephen Curry. Obviously, like, that dynamic has changed a little bit with the addition of KD, but to me, still, Steph does the things on the court where I'm like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
Like, how did he do that?
Yeah.
He had one against the Nuggets, like, I don't know, last week sometime, where he just, like, it looked like he was, like, dribbling the ball off his leg. You're like, all right, this possession is not going to end well. And then he just turns around, flicks it up from, like, 35, bang.
No one else in the league can do it. It's crazy.
He's simultaneously, like, crossing someone up, then about to turn the ball over, then just turns and fires it. He doesn't even know. You're like, he doesn't even know where he is on the court.
Yeah, I mean, he just always has his eyes on the basket.
Yeah.
No matter, even, like, I don't know. It's just unreal that you can be able to dribble like that and still keep your head up.
He just, like, plays a completely different brand of, like, freestyle basketball that 29 teams don't play.
Word. All right, so today, or this week, is the 20th anniversary of the release of Space Jam.
Hell yeah.
It's a movie.
No, it's a classic.
It's a classic. It's a classic. But you saw it as an adult pretty
recently.
Yeah,
saw it on Sunday
night.
Theaters. Unbelievable.
All right. So,
so much fun.
Obviously, when you're a kid, it's like, oh my God, this is the best movie of all time.
Yeah.
What are your takeaways as a 28-year-old when you're watching it?
Well, I mean, first of all, if you're in a certain age range and you watch that movie, like, the opening scene gives me goosebumps, I'll be honest. Just like the music coming in, and then there's like Mike as a kid. No, you're not feeling this?
I haven't seen this movie in so long.
I think seeing it in theaters like changed it for me too. Again, to like live through it again.
For me, it's all about the soundtrack, man.
That's what I'm saying. Like yeah. That's part of it. The you know, I Believe I Can Fly and like. Anyway, so getting into the
Quad City DJs.
I mean, like Stan, who's played by Newman. Hilarious, but I don't know, there's just like, I feel like there's a lot of stuff that they put in the movie that like it was funny to like the parents that were taking the kids to the movie originally that is like funny to me now.
Well, like Bill Murray just being in the movie.
Yeah, Bill Murray's hilarious in it.
All right,
the golf scene with Bill Murray, so good.
But yeah, and Jordan is doing a big campaign around Space Jam for their 20th anniversary. There is all the Monstar stuff. So, I mean, are we getting Space Jam 2? Like, what's good?
So, do you think they should make it or no?
Yeah.
You don't think it ruins the like, what Space Jam is by itself?
If everything gets ruined.
That's
like,
the
they
thing.
Can't, they can't let it. Nothing is sacred.
It's printing money to do a second one. So, it's going to happen.
It'll
regardless.
Definitely happen. I'm more interested in seeing what the soundtrack will be like. Like, what?
Ooh.
Like, can you get Lil Uzi Vert and the Space
Jam
2
sound? Not.
Why not? They had Method Man and Be Real and those guys on the Space Jam, original Space Jam soundtrack.
Right.
So that's like a fine line you got to tiptoe, though. You're right.
But I need answers for like some stuff in Space Jam, though.
Some loose ends?
I need Danny Ainge to explain.
Oh,
what in God's name he was doing? There's the scene where the Monstars, well, they're not the Monstars yet. The aliens like steal Charles Barkley's powers, right?
Yeah.
If you watch closely and slow that down, there's like literally the moment when Charles loses his powers. Someone passes the ball to Danny Ainge with like 17 seconds left on the shot clock, and he just immediately in the air like alley-oop fires it at the hoop from like 12 feet out. And they just like keep playing. I realize that wasn't like what you were supposed to be watching at that moment. But what the hell is he doing? Someone out there got to help me out with this.
And,
like,
you know,
did he? But even if they were like filming that as background, why would you shoot that ball like that? I don't know.
I bet no one has ever asked him that question.
We need to do like the investigation of the actual basketball moments.
Like if you were at a Celtics
game, like that 5 minutes.
If you were at a Celtics game and you were in a pool and Danny Ainge just happened to be talking.
Show him the clip.
Would you be like, Abe from Slam?
Would I?
Yeah. I mean, nobody else is going to ask that question.
I need like a private moment. I wouldn't want everyone else to hear the answer at the same time. I need that exclusive.
Like, what the hell are you doing in Space Jam? I bet he'd be like, all right, interview over. Or he'd just be like, I don't remember. They just told me to throw the ball up. Maybe he wanted to be the star. Maybe they lied to him. They were like, yeah, Daniel, you're going to star in Space Jam. The aliens are going to come take your powers. And then he's like, oh, yeah, hell yeah, I'll do Space Jam. Like, let's go. And then, like, Larry Bird was like, nah, my dude, like, actually, we're going to do Charles Barkley instead.
So I was thinking about that, too, when I was watching it. Like, how did they specifically choose these players and who would they choose?
They're all
now?
Michael Jordan's boys, man.
True. But and then it's like there's two guys from the same team.
Who?
Muggsy and
OJ. Oh, Larry Johnson, true.
Yeah.
True.
Or like if they did it now, would they do it? Would they pick the players specifically? Like, is it LeBron and his boys now?
Dude, it's obviously going to be LeBron, Melo, Dwayne Wade.
I know, but okay, Chris Paul would be like the small one.
Yeah.
But
be
they
the brotherhood, man.
But they gotta still have like the you know multiple shapes and sizes of the Monstars.
So what they get like oh Kristaps in Space Jam 2?
Oh wow! See now you're thinking.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
As the Sean Bradley character?
Yeah, well, yes, but only because he's big
himself.
And white. Yeah. Not.
Oh, you're right.
Not like a skill level thing.
You kind of need like the tall white guy in the mix.
Yeah,
you're right.
Kristaps. So we got Kristaps, Melo, Dwayne Wade. I said Chris Paul or no? Chris Paul. Who else has signed a clutch? JR's got to be in it.
He could.
JR on the golf course.
That'd be good.
Look, we're right
could
in
throw
the space.
Bosch in there.
Right in the Space Jam too.
Some people think Chris Bosch already
right
looks
here.
Like an alien anyway.
Chill.
So
come on, man.
I'm sorry.
Don't throw shit at our boy.
I said some people are saying it.
Some people, not us.
Yeah.
All right, you got to clarify. But yeah, anytime you think of Space Jam, you think of Rick Ross, right?
What?
So Rick Ross just dropped a song called Kyrie.
That's just good radio right there.
Yo, the perfect, transitioning. Man. Gotta love the pregnant pause. So Rick Ross dropped a song called Kyrie.
Yeah.
Where he calls over the weekend. Stephen Curry, Stephen Curry, which is like, yeah, how, number one, how does he not know how to say Stephen Curry? And number two, why isn't anyone to be like, yo, it's Stephen, not Stephen?
No one, I understand like not telling rappers and basketball players no to certain things, like, yo, I want to buy this car.
Yeah.
No one in the crew is going to be like, no, you probably shouldn't do that. They just let him do it, whatever, it's harmless. If you're a rapper and you literally rap a man's name, you mispronounce it overtly, no one in the room or on the production team or on literally any level is going to be like, yo, it's Stephen, not Steven.
Yeah, it's also, this is Stephen Curry. It's not like George
Hill.
How
many times has he heard this name? It's also not a hard name to pronounce.
No, not at all.
It's not,
man,
like Kristaps Porzingis or some very complicated long name from a different country.
I would love, there's not
Stephen
enough
Stephen Curry, man.
What's my man's name on the Knicks? Who looks like Ellen?
Mondugas or whatever? He does look like Ellen DeGeneres. I've been saying that.
I want to hear that guy get name dropped in a song, man. What is his name?
I genuinely don't know.
Oh, my God.
Ellen DeGeneres, man.
No, it's not Ellen DeGeneres. It's like Miss Dugas.
I was playing 2K with a friend, and he kept hitting threes with this dude. And I was getting so pissed and cursing out Ellen DeGeneres.
All right, I just Google searched Miss Dugas, and nothing came up, so that's clearly not it.
All right, well, while you do that,
yeah,
the point of bringing this up was just, like, why do rappers keep feeling the need to, like, put out songs that are named after basketball players that have absolutely nothing to do with the basketball player? I mean, I realize that we posted it on our site, so I guess mission accomplished, but...
Question answered, Abe, but, I mean, I don't know. I mean, like, sometimes...
Do you think he... I don't know. Do you think he
was like, oh, this I was like a name, I need a name for this song?
Yeah.
And he was just watching the Cavs game. He's like, oh, Kyrie is perfect.
Or do you think he's like, he had a prior discussion with Kyrie Irving? Like, yo, I'm going to make this song for you.
Oh, he just like, and Kyrie hit him. He's like, yo, where's my song? And
I don't
then
know.
So he felt like he was guilted into making a song and had to call Kyrie.
And had to mispronounce Stephen Curry's name?
So maybe.
Conspiracy theory?
Maybe.
Did it on purpose?
Maybe. Kyrie disrespected Steph so bad in the finals, right?
Yeah.
So him calling Stephen Curry is his way of being like, on a song called Kyrie. It all comes together, man. We always figure it out in the end. No? Nah?
I don't know.
Nah, it's a little too complex.
Rick Ross did read Slam at one point, but then we also had a Instagram beef with Rick Ross at another point, so
yeah,
you know, he's kind of all over the map.
Yeah, I don't really feel like spending much more time on this.
Me neither.
So Kobe came out over the weekend and did a video with The Ringer, speaking of Bill Simmons again, and he said he has a comfortable relationship with death. I would say my relationship with death is anything but comfortable. Is probably my most uncomfortable relationship in life.
I'm assuming this was all related to his sneaker, which is named the Kobe AD.
Yeah, I don't know much about this, so why don't you give a little primer?
So the Kobe 12 just released, but it's not called the Kobe 12 because obviously Kobe Bryant is retired, so the sneaker is actually called the Kobe AD, which after death, but it's like he's not dead. I mean, all due respect to naming sneakers, what the hell ever.
Yeah.
I mean, every sneaker has a stupid name at this point.
Wow.
It does.
You're right. You're right. Go
they
ahead.
Do.
You're right, dude.
Across all brands equally. But, like...
I'm just watching the dollars fly out of this building.
No, I'm just saying... I'm just giving
I'm
you
picturing,
the...
I'm picturing Adam Figman on the Acela train back to New York right now, just clutching his chest.
Poor guy. Poor kid. What was it? Oh, I mean, that's just the setup to I guess, where that question came from.
Yeah.
But it's just such a ridiculous thing to say. An amazing headline, but a ridiculous thing to say. How could anyone's relationship with death be comfortable? Comfortable as in, like, you're laying down when you're dead? I don't know.
I don't know. You got to love Kobe, man. Kobe's the best. He's the best.
He is.
Agree with me. Is he not the best? One more thing before we get out of here.
We got to make way for the JJ interview, man.
Yeah, I mean, of course. Things are really getting worse by the day, man.
Yeah, and actually,
in our world.
If you listen to our last podcast, it's a very strange,
just about to bring this up,
very
too.
Strange time capsule into 12 hours before everything went to shit. So
yeah, so I was up here, you know, pontificating that there's no way Hillary Clinton was going to lose.
Yeah, man, I was anxious that day.
I was trying to calm you down, man. But anyway, you know, as we all know, she lost. But the next day, New Balance comes out and says, you know, they support Donald Trump and his presidency because, you know, I'm not going to act like I know all this, but there's like a TPP trade thing going on. And that
trade ting
that, you know, makes New Balance shoes more expensive to make. And, you know, so they're in support of keeping things in house, which is fine, but is also what they should have said like a month later, not the day after the fact.
I mean, look, like the day after the election in particular, but certainly every day for the last week has been like open season for tone deaf people to be out here being tone deaf.
Yeah.
So
I mean, before we walked in here, I read a headline on the Washington Post that New Balance is now the favorite sneaker of neo-Nazis. I'm like, are you kidding me, man? I can't even get properly cozy anymore, dude. Gotta start bringing these blow, man, but
you can't do it.
What?
I mean, literally, I see people wearing New Balance now. I get mad.
I'm throwing all mine out.
Yeah, it's bad.
I'm throwing all mine out. Gotta bring, as our intern Jahad said, we gotta bring ASICs back. You're about to see me out here in the size 16
hey,
ASICs,
man. This could be a blessing in disguise, man. If any sneaker brand wants to replace PD's full New Balance collection.
Oh yeah. Oh my god.
You know where to find
it. It's open season, man. I'll take any and all.
He's ready for the endorsement, man.
You got anything else? I mean, I kind of hate leaving on a note like this. You got like one little thing you can. Okay, well, how about this? JJ Barea coming up next.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear you guys chat.
Yeah, so actually Franklin sat in as well. Frankie helped set this whole thing up. JJ was in town. Obviously, the Knicks were playing the Mavs on Monday night. So JJ stopped by with a couple of people from the Puerto Rican Basketball Federation. It was the head of the BSN, which is the league in Puerto Rico, and the commissioner of Puerto Rican basketball is like he was described to me as like the Jerry Colangelo of Puerto Rico basketball. So JJ sat in, just talked about his upbringing in Puerto Rico, what he's doing for the national team and you know, the camps and everything he's running down in Puerto Rico. And then we talked about the Mavs, talked about his 2011 playoffs when the Mavs won the finals. We talked God, Sham God, what's going on with the Mavs this year. So, yeah, no, really, really nice, cool guy. Yeah, hopefully you enjoy that.
Hey, he's had an amazing career considering that you probably tower over him.
Oh, my God. He was like, he's really not tall. I think he's probably a little shorter than you, to be honest.
Yeah.
Which is
it's
crazy.
The same way I felt when we did the shoe with Isaiah Thomas, and I'm just thinking, like 1 second, you're like, man, I could post this guy up.
No
and then
chance.
You're like, wait a minute.
No chance.
Absolutely no way.
Yo, and I was looking at, we got all the scores, or the top scorers in the league right now. JJ Barea on this list, man.
Word?
No, I thought he was.
All right.
He was on a different one I was looking
the
at.
The research boys at it again.
He's not. This is page one. He's definitely on page two. I think he's averaging about 18 points a game to start the season. So he's having a nice little year for himself.
What's up?
But yeah, big thanks to everybody for listening. We'll hopefully have another pod up by the end of this week.
Yeah, we're going to keep them coming.
Yeah. So yeah, peace.
Peace. You know what it is. It's your man SKYZOO Skyzoo, live from the borough. I'm up here with the homies at Slam Magazine, and this is the Respect the Game podcast. Let's do it.
All right, world. It's Pete Walsh back again. I got my boy Franklin Kaye again filling in for Abe Schwadron today.
Glad to be here. Thank you, guys.
And then we are very, very fortunate to have Mavs point guard JJ Barea in the house.
What's up, fellas?
JJ,
thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks. So, JJ, you're obviously in town for the Knick game. We're recording this on a Monday. You guys are playing tonight. But you're also doing a lot of work with Puerto Rico basketball. Up here doing some promotion. So, you know, why don't you just tell us a little bit about what you're doing with Puerto Rico basketball, what you got going on there?
Well, Puerto Rico for me is the most important thing. That's where I learned everything. It gave me everything. That's where I learned how to play basketball. That's how I got better as a basketball player. So, you know, as being the only player in the NBA from Puerto Rico, just trying to help. We're just trying to make the league down there better, get the future for Puerto Rico, the kids, the fans and the kids, they love basketball. Basketball is like baseball now in Puerto Rico. So, no, just helping the president, the Puerto Rico Basketball Federation, as much as I can with basketball. I'm the point guard for the national team, too. So, yeah, just creating an example and helping with whatever I can.
Cool. Yeah, so Fernando and Yum were actually saying that, Yum was actually saying that, you know, they have all these different academies that are, you know, trying to start in over there in the island. Speak about that. You know, when you go back home in the summertime, you know, what do you see in terms of the kids and how they're engaging with the sport of basketball?
Oh, they love it. I do, for the last 10 years, I've been doing basketball camps in the summer for my foundation. And we got to put a limit every year because it's incredible, the kids that want to play basketball. And I think June is just starting, but he's going to do a good job. We got leagues, you name it, we got it all over the place for all type of ages, all type of kids playing all over Puerto Rico. So, yeah, it's and then my future, when I retire, I would like to do something in Puerto Rico, either like a school, basketball school or basketball clinic or something. But, yeah, we got a lot of good talent, a lot of kids that love the game.
Cool. And then maybe not a lot of people know, but you've had quite a distinguished international career to go along with your NBA career. I read you won gold at 2006 and 2010 Central American Caribbean Games. You won gold at the 2011 Pan Am Games, silver at the 2007 Pan Am Games. So, you know, how much has your international career helped you in the NBA and in the league?
Oh, it's been amazing. I played since I was 17 with the 19 and under team, then with the 21 and under team. We were really good. So that helps me, like, in the summer. That's like I get to play a lot. Mm-hmm. I get to play against the best talent in the world. Makes me a better player. Keeps me staying in great shape for the NBA year. I represent Puerto Rico, that I love to do. I play basketball with my boys that we grew up together in Puerto Rico, playing against each other and with us. So it's awesome, you know, and I think it's really important to represent your country, and it helps you also with your basketball.
Cool. And then you also played in the BSN, correct? Well, you were at Northeastern, right?
Yeah, my first, I played when I was in high school. I didn't play much, but I was there. Yeah. That was my first pro team. It was fun. Yeah. I was young. I learned how to, the pro life. And then when I went to college, I couldn't play. I didn't play those 4 years. And then after college, I played that summer. In between my NBA workouts, I was playing in the league. We made it to the finals. I played 25 games. So that was huge. Mm-hmm. It helped me play against professional players. So when I got to the NBA, I was a little bit more ready.
Yeah, and then, you know, you were in the CAA, right, with Northeastern? That was the conference you played
Yeah,
in?
My last season, yeah. My last year, I was in the CAA.
And then it was America East.
America East,
that,
the first
right?
three, yeah.
And people don't know, man, you put up monster numbers in college. It was like, I think you had like 22-11 your senior year, right?
Yeah, my senior year was, every year I got better, but my senior year in the Colonia, I got player of the year. And I was averaging like 21-9, and it was we had a great team. So it was really helpful for me.
Cool. And then I guess to go back even further, and this is probably where we should have started. So my apologies, but you know, growing up in Puerto Rico, and you know, how did you get introduced to basketball instead of maybe like boxing or baseball? You know, who was the person that put the ball in your hands? I guess.
Well, I got two older brothers. Mm-hmm. My mom is a volleyball and tennis coach, and my dad just is a swimmer, but he loves sports. So yeah, since I remember, I was my brothers were practicing, I was just following them. And since I don't know, I had Pampers on 4 years old, I was already dribbling balls, playing tennis and basketball were my first two. Then I did a little baseball, but basketball was the one that from the get go it was always year round. And I mix every sport, but yeah. And in Puerto Rico, when you're 5 and 6, like those games, they're really good. Like kids know how to play, so it was fun.
Cool. And to fast forward a little bit, so you know now you're 10 years deep into your career in the NBA, undrafted. Speak about that. You know now you look back at it and say, did you see this? Did you see this coming, Nick?
Oh yeah, I still don't. Like people tell me, yo, this is your 11th season in the NBA. I'm like, yeah, I still don't believe it. I just played it growing up because I loved it. It was so much fun and playing every sport and competing. And I just wanted to go to college and play basketball. just for the fun, because I know I see it on TV and it looked fun. I didn't know I was going to make it to the NBA. My last year of college, that's when coach started, you keep going, you're going to have a chance for the NBA. But yeah, it's been incredible experience, and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, and you've played outside of a brief stint in Minnesota. You've played most of your, or all the rest of your career in Dallas. You know, players seem to love playing in Dallas. They seem to love the city. So, you know, what makes it such a great organization and such a great city to play in?
Oh yeah, I'm surprised more players don't come to Dallas. Yeah. Dallas is not like, since the first day I got there, it's been Class A. The city, the fans, the how people live over there. Mark Cuban is a best owner. The staff, they do just everything is for the players. You know, for us to be comfortable, for us to have a great place, and I've enjoyed it.
Cool. Yeah, and then you mentioned Cuban. He's always a fixture at games, always, you know, barking at refs and, you know, talking to players during the games.
Yeah, he just wants to be, you know, he's a part of us. He's always around, always talking to us, trying to see how we're feeling, what can he do to help.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he's always helping us with the refs. So.
You got a big smile on your face. I feel like you got at least one good Mark Cuban story you can share.
You know, I one time, he's always trying for the best for the image for the team, the best for myself. So one time when I was younger, and I used to dunk, like, easy.
Oh?
Yeah. after practices, I just throw it up and do some dunks backwards or throw it up and dunk and stuff like that. And he comes to me and he's like, Jay, I'm gonna call the NBA. I'm like, Mark, what are you talking about? I'm going to put you in the NBA dunk contest.
No.
And I'm like, no, Mark, like, calm down. This is not happening. I got like one or two dunks, and that's it. Yeah, but it'll be awesome for us, for you. And I said, well, he's always thinking about the best next thing. So that was pretty fun.
Yeah.
And where do you see this team? You know, speak a bit about this particular team this year. You know, where do you see this team going in terms of, you know, what you guys are trying to develop here?
Well, we had a slow start, but I think we're playing better now. We're getting used to each other. I think Harrison Barnes is doing an amazing job. Hell, he's getting more comfortable. And he's gonna have a great year. Bogut helps down low, and he's getting more comfortable too. Now we just gotta get a Dirk healthy, so he could, you know, he's older, but he could still help a little bit. And D. Will is hurt right now. He could help Devin Harris. So when we get everybody together, I think we could split minutes and stuff like that. And we're a smart team with a lot of experience. And so we'll see how we do.
Yeah, it's a long season.
Exactly.
And you guys, you know, I think last year you had a similar rut in the middle of the season where you lost a bunch
exactly.
of games in a row and
yeah.
you came back and made the playoffs.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's never good to overreact, and we in the media love to do that. It's, you know, we follow day to day like you guys do, so you're much more in tune with the team. So
oh, no question. Yeah, we know it's going to be hard, but I think the coach Rick does a good job of keeping us. It's a process, and he's never going to quit. So yeah, it's going to be a long season, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And over the summer, the team added, you know, slam favorite New York City legend God Shamgod to the staff.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's it been like learning from God and you know, what a practice like? You can't wipe the smile off your face.
No, he's been great. Yeah. You're talking about it. He's been great. I had I worked out with him a couple times already on my off day or something, and he's been awesome. You know, he's working a lot with Harrison Barnes too, just working on different type of stuff. But he's doing a good job. Everybody likes him. He's a great guy, and he knows what he's talking about, so it's good that we picked him up.
How many times has he crossed you up in practice?
No, he's playing, like, they do, like, a coaches, they do, like, sometimes they do a scouting and stuff like that, and so he tries to cross people over.
Yeah. Are we going to see you throw the sham god at anybody?
Nah. I don't know. I'm kind of a simple, more just go by you than doing all type of stuff, yeah.
Yeah. You also mentioned Dirk earlier, who, by my money, is probably the best international player of all time. So you've played with him for a long time now. What's it like just being up close with him? Everybody talks about his work ethic and, you know, how he has the German shooting coach, whose name is evading me at the moment, who just drills him.
Holger,
also.
Yeah.
So, you know, is that fabricated or is it the real deal? What's his work ethic like?
Yeah, he's the hardest worker, hands down, that I ever seen. Mm-hmm. I heard Kobe... used to work hard like Dirk. But yeah, hands down. Like, sometimes I get back and I'm exhausted and he's over there working out and the same thing again. He has a routine. And now when he got older, he's just working on his body, just trying to stay healthy so he could play. And then he's just a goofball, you know. He's always joking around. He loves to be around his teammates. That's why he's still playing, I think. He loves to be in the locker room. He loves to travel with his teammates. Best teammate all times by far. He makes everybody else around him better. He don't care if he scores 2 points or 4 points or 40. Unless we win, he's happy.
And I think, you know, you gave us your favorite, one of your favorite Cuban moments. Just curious, you know, in terms of Dirk, anything in particular that you could look back at and just laugh it off?
You know what? There's so many with Dirk. It's just everything is outside the basketball court is funny, man. He's just a character. Everything is a joke. The way he talks to the refs is funny. Just the way he talks Spanish. Anytime he hears me talking Spanish, he goes, abuelo, abuelo. That's his own. The only word he knows is grandpa. In Spanish, no, but he's just a great guy.
Yeah, and I mean, it's such an interesting story for to have this 7-foot German dude just be such a fixture in the Dallas community. It's really just, I think, you know, people are going to look back at Dirk's career and just realize what a special player he was, what a special talent he was. And for a guy that big, be doing it for this long is just so impressive.
Incredible. And Dallas people, they know what they have. They know what they've been watching. So they're grateful and they show it.
Yeah. And then just a few more before we let you go, and thank you again. You know, we got to talk about your 2011 playoff run. You know, just so good and impressive, and you were just playing out of your mind. You know, what do you attribute that to? How did you know, you elevate your game to that level to play that well? For I think you guys played 21 games in that playoff stretch. So what went into that?
Well, I remember I started the season real slow. I came off a shoulder injury, so I couldn't hit a three for like 2 months. So then I started getting a little rhythm, and by the end of the season, I was playing my best basketball I ever played in my life. Mm-hmm. So we got to the playoffs, and in the playoffs, it's different. Playoffs is more about people, you got to make your own play, stuff like that. So we needed guys to get to the paint and create. So it started just, you know, getting good rhythm, but I was lucky, you know, my coaches, Jason Kidd at the time was awesome for me. Yeah. He used to just throw me the ball and say, go, attack, attack, attack. The whole time. And then you had some good runs. Coach calling plays for me every time I go on the floor. The ball's in my hand. I'm running pick and roll after pick and roll all the time for me. And I got a good rhythm. The confidence was high because my teammates and my coaches were backing me up. And then in the finals, you know, I had the first two games, I was playing good, but I couldn't hit a shot. Mm-hmm. But I was getting where I want. I was getting to the paint and stuff. And then I get a text from coach, hey, you're starting.
Oh, wow.
You're gonna start the next couple games, so be ready. And that gave me a little boost. Even though I'm not making shots, I'm still gonna start and try to. And it went through the roof.
And that was one of the most hyped finals ever.
I mean,
that
was awesome.
You guys were playing Miami, And I mean, Jason Kidd telling you to attack, attack, attack. Is that the reason you got your ass knocked down by
by Bynum? Probably. Probably. I shouldn't have attacked that time. We were up 20.
30.
We were up, but it was still like 8-10 minutes left in the fourth, and we were killing them with the high pick and roll, and then that was a tough play.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
But after that series, you know, reporters were talking to Kobe, and they were asking about Dirk, about Jason Terry, about Jason Kidd. And then he just point blank said, JJ kicked our ass.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. That's awesome.
I mean, that's got to feel amazing. Yeah. Kobe's giving
you respect,
right?
Yeah. I know all my boys at Puerto Rico, everybody telling me, hey, yo, Kobe's talking some good stuff about you. That always helps.
And then just one last one about that 2011 finals, you know, going up against LeBron his first year in Miami, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade, you know, you guys were the underdog. But you guys had a special team yourselves, between you and we mentioned Jason Kidd, Dirk, Tyson Chandler, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Was he on that team? Yeah, Tyson Chandler, Terry, like just really just a deep, well-coached team. So did you guys, you know, I guess players don't view themselves as underdogs, but when you were going into that final, did you think, hey, you know, we can take this? I don't know why people aren't talking about us.
Yeah, we felt like underdogs since the beginning of the playoffs. You know, we got through Portland, it was a tough series, but then we always had problems with that Laker team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we swept them, I think our confidence, and we knew we were like, hey, we have a chance. And I think when we swept the Lakers, everybody was like, we passed the Lakers, so we good now. And then from there on, I think we got hot at the right time, and we were unbeatable.
Cool. All right, JJ, thank you so much for your time, man. Really appreciate you coming up.
Awesome.
Best of luck rest of the season. Best of luck with everything with Puerto Rico basketball. If you ever need help, please don't hesitate to ask us. Thank you.
Thank you.